from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. We're joined now by South Bay Congressman Ro Khanna, the freshman representative who unseated longtime Congressman Mike Honda to lead California's 17th district, which includes parts of Alameda and Santa Clara counties. Khanna has been vocal in his criticism of new Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai and told San Francisco Magazine recently he'd risk arrest to help prevent the deportation of undocumented immigrants. Congressman Ro Khanna, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Well, you might get your chance to practice civil disobedience depending now on how the Department of Homeland Security ends up implementing the changes that it put out in the memos yesterday that we just talked about in the first half hour. First, I just want to get your reaction to the rules that were put out by Department of Homeland Security and what your plans are to do anything about it.
Well, my concern is someone who cares about the Constitution is due process, and the rules basically deprive folks of going to the courts, access to lawyers, and basic due process. And they also are overbroad. I mean, no one disputes that criminals with felonies should be deported. I mean, the President Obama had that policy of deporting gang members or violent felons. But this would basically subject folks to minor offenses, to possible deportation. So they're overbroad. They lack due process. And we need to really work to make sure that we're standing up for constitutional safeguards.
All right. You're an individual member of Congress in the minority as a Democrat. What do you do to challenge the implementation of this?
Well, we saw that there is still a large voice. I mean, there's the whole process of the courts in terms of making sure that things are constitutional. Our office will make sure that people have the ability to get lawyers and to have their constitutional rights vindicated. And I will work with Zoe Lofgren. Zoe has been a very big leader on immigration policy, as will the entire caucus, to safeguard basic values that all Americans hold.
Is Congress, though, able to be a meaningful check on the administration, Democrats in Congress specifically? I know you're on the budget committee, but essentially, right, as an individual member of Congress, you get one vote. You get to ask questions on the committee of various things that are being appropriated. Can, though, with Democrats in the minority, be a meaningful check?
Absolutely. I don't just think the Democrats in Congress can be a meaningful check. I think any American citizen can be a meaningful check. We don't have a nation that's run by one individual, whether that's the president or a congressperson or a senator. And we've seen a number of checks already. Putzer, the awful choice for labor secretary, was defeated. You had Michael Flynn resign because of his contacts with Russia. You had the House Republicans pull back on their plans to abolish the Office of Congressional Ethics. So in America, public sentiment and popular opinion is everything. And whether you're a member of Congress, whether you're a citizen, whether you're an activist, you can help form a public opinion and hold this administration accountable.
We're talking with Congressman Ro Khanna, and we'd like to invite you to join the conversation by calling 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your questions or comments for Congressman Ro Khanna on Facebook, on Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. You have advocated what has been described as more of a Bernie Sanders-style economic populism as the direction for the Democratic Party to go, to be able to draw and galvanize support, especially in those regions where people surprisingly went for President Donald Trump. Can you talk a little bit about what your economic message is?
Well, I think we have to make the moral argument. And most Americans feel that the rules of capitalism in the modern economy have been rigged. Let me give you a few concrete examples. We have companies that have money offshore that aren't being subject to tax. We ought to tax companies on their offshore profits. a lot of the rules on stock buybacks were relaxed in 1982 and deregulation, where companies are investing instead of in more plants and in their employees on helping their shareholders. We need to change that. We need to allow for the importation of drugs from Canada and need to allow for Medicare to negotiate with pharmaceuticals. So we need to fundamentally restructure the rules of a rigged economy, not to help the wealthy special interests, but to help ordinary Americans.
And President Trump, though, has also talked about, you know, trying to bring those investments back from companies, right, who have offshore accounts by giving them, you know, a tax holiday or breaks and things like that. So how is the Democrats' message different from Trump's message around that?
Well, it's very different. He's talking about letting them bring it back with almost no tax and allowing them to do stock buybacks, which would basically help shareholders. What we're saying is they should be taxed on that money when they have that money offshore. They shouldn't be avoiding corporate tax. That money would come back to the U.S. Treasury. And then
but what would be the incentive?
The incentive is they're a U.S. company. They shouldn't be avoiding a tax. They're violating taxes. This was a law passed by Bill Clinton in the 1990s that was awful. Check the box legislation that allowed companies to check the box and said they are a foreign subsidiary and they don't have to pay tax. And that has to change. You know, it was John F. Kennedy was talking about these tax havens back in the 1960s and going after it. So what we need to do is have a basic view. If you're an American company, you're taking advantage of American laws, you ought to be paying tax on your foreign earnings. And there are many tech CEOs. Tim Cook has called for ending a deferral at a certain rate. So that is the progressive vision, and it's not Trump's vision, which is let these folks bring this back at a tax holiday and then use it for stock buybacks. That doesn't help the working class.
Well, we're getting some calls coming in, and I want to start with Tasneem in Union City. Hi, Tasneem.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to call in. We had a very personal situation that affected us last night. My husband and I are both American-born citizens. We just happen to be Muslim with very Muslim names. And he was actually stopped from flying home from Berlin last night. He said he was flagged by some random U.S. immigration system. And, you know, as you can imagine, it's pretty frustrating because, you know, we lived here our entire lives and all of a sudden we're told we can't go back to our country. So, you know, how do we prevent things like this in the face of the Muslim ban or immigration ban?
Congressman Connor.
Well, Tasneem, thank you for sharing your story, and I'm sorry for what happened to your husband. Obviously, an American citizen has basic constitutional rights and cannot be discriminated against or profiled at airports. And we in Congress, and there are many Republicans who believe this too, will stand up to make sure that those rights are protected and have vigilance. And I urge you, I mean, you're in Eric Swalwell's district. I urge you to contact him and he can look into what happened in your particular case. And certainly for folks who have that happen in my district, our office will look out for it.
Tasneem, thanks for sharing that with us. Let's hear next from Jerry in Cupertino. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, good morning. Just real quick, I want to thank the representative. He's starting out right out of the gate going well. But I was wondering when the Democrats are going to listen to someone like George Lakoff, who talks about framing the arguments, framing the conversation, and using words like protection against regulation. That is the, you know, regulation when you talk about, when the Republicans talk about, oh, we're going to eliminate regulations and get things moving again, the Democrats should be coming back and say, well, those are not regulations, those are protections. We're protecting the public. We're, you know, clean air, coal versus, you know, it's a situation where as long as the Republicans can frame the argument and say these are regulations and it's hurting the economy, the Democrats have to come back and say, no, they're protections. The EPA provides protections. The SEC provides protections, and they are protecting the American public, not regulating against business.
Jerry, thanks. I think I understand your point. You're asking a question about language. And Congressman Khanna, if I could, I think one of the weaknesses of Hillary Clinton's campaign, Secretary Clinton's campaign, for example, was that it didn't articulate an economic message, right, that was understandable and relatable to people. And you're looking at a situation now, say in 2 years, right, when there is an election for legislators. We have, you know, the markets are on fire, right, because businesses are looking forward to potential tax breaks and fewer regulations that they're getting, right? And so people will arguably see themselves potentially in a better economic situation based on how the stock market is doing. I guess what I'm really getting at is, what's your pitch? Like, I understand you were talking about, you know, trying to bring offshore accounts, you know, back into the U.S., things like that. But if you were speaking to somebody, right, say in a swing state or district, what is the Democrats' pitch in 2 years around, you know, making people's lives better?
No, I appreciate that. I want to answer the caller's question, Jerry's question also, and acknowledge that I think you're right to talk about the benefits of clean air, the protection that that affords. One of the points I always make is, when every time I get on an airplane, I'm glad we have regulations. I wouldn't want airplanes not to have regulations. It's for protecting our safety. And I do think we need, to Lakoff's point, to make the positive case. I think you ask a great question. Look, I have a lot of admiration for Hillary Clinton's career in public service, but the jobs message, the economic message, didn't get out. And I think there are two components to our message. One is, we're going to help you prepare for the jobs of the future. I am going to Appalachia in eastern Kentucky on March 13th. There is a program there that's taking 40 kids of coal miners and others, teaching them 4 months of iOS software that is leading to a concrete job. We've got to make the investments in apprenticeships and training and actual job creation in these areas, and they have to be the jobs of the future, not a vision of that we're going to bring back certain jobs that may not be able, that may not exist. The second thing is, we've got to talk about the benefits to the middle class and working class families. Trump, the stock market may be doing really well, and Trump has put a lot of Wall Street folks in his cabinet, but those aren't the people who voted for him. The people who are hurting, they still have higher prescription drugs prices. They still are not getting enough wage support. They still are having to deal with a shrinking benefits and don't have enough Social Security. We've got to talk about getting the rules of capitalism, of the modern economy, working not just for the folks who can afford to be invested in the stock market, but to work for working class families and the middle class. If we have a vision of the jobs of the future and preparing for that, with a vision of rewriting some of the rules of capitalism to help the many and not just the elite, I think that's a winning message. We saw, one last point, we saw Hillary Clinton, when she was talking about these things in the debates, actually ahead of Donald Trump. Where I think there was a tactical mistake made is, the last 3 weeks became all about attacking Donald Trump instead of talking about the rigged economy and a populist, constructive, forward-looking economic message.
So when you say rewriting the rules of capitalism, I know that you came out against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, right? Is that something that you're going to stress? Because it feels like, in some ways, Trump has already seized that area.
Well, I think that's one area, but there are so many. I'm talking about basic things about prescription drugs. Why is it that you can't import drugs from Canada? Are the Canadians that unsafe that when they take their drugs? I haven't read about Canadians dying by taking U.S. pharmaceuticals, and yet we can't import those drugs here. I'm talking about, why is it that these companies are allowed to have stock buybacks, where they can basically take money and buy their own stock to appreciate the value for stakeholders instead of investing in their employees? These are some of these rules. They weren't always written that way. Before the 1980s and before some of this deregulation, we had rules that really helped ordinary Americans. And we have written rules in a way over the last 20 to 30 years that have privileged the elite interests.
And you believe that retraining is also a compelling message to the
everyday American.
Just
retraining, because I think a lot of people, they think of retraining and they say politicians have been saying retraining for forever and it doesn't lead to jobs. I think what we need is specific credentialing in specific skills, and rethinking labor markets to say, what are the credentials and how do we get companies actually talking about creating jobs, having industry work with particular apprenticeships or credentialing to actually have job creation.
Let's go to more calls. Nicole in Sunnyvale. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Congressman, for your service. I moved to this country 8 years back for my graduate studies at Stanford. But as you know, we have a discriminatory per-country quota here for employment-based green cards, because of which I'm looking at a 50-year wait to get my green card, and I'm on my work visa until then. And it makes my life really miserable because I can't switch jobs easily. I can't start my own business or startup. And not only affects me because of these issues, but it also affects American workers because employers misuse this because they know that people who are stuck in backlog don't have the ability to switch jobs and things like that. My question is a couple of them. One comment is, I thank you so much I thank you so much for co-sponsoring legislations like H.R. 392, the Fairness for High-Skilled Immigrants Act, which removes this discriminatory per-country quota in employment-based green cards, because employment-based green cards should be purely based on skills and first-come, first-served. It should not discriminate people based on the country of birth. And the second thing is, there are more than 1.5 million legal immigrants who are stuck in this backlog, who have followed the rules and regulations of this country, immigration laws of this country, but they are still left vulnerable to the executive actions of the president, and their visas may be canceled, or when they're coming back, they may not get stamping, and they may not let into this country, and they have lived here for 10, 20 years with their jobs and their house and everything in here, and they have to leave all that. And this is something that's not really talked about in the media. I just wanted to highlight that, and even the 1.5 million legal immigrants who follow the laws are still vulnerable because of
thank you. I think we're getting a sense of the points that are important to you. Rokana, do you have a response?
Well, I appreciate your question, Gogol, and your involvement. I think the important point you raise is that we want folks to become citizens. We want them to become green cards, because when they are on an H-1B visa, they often are being underpaid or exploited by companies. What we need to do is reform the H-1B visa process, and I've been saying this for years, and really have people here as green cards or on citizenship so that they're not being underpaid and that's not hurting American workers.
I mentioned in the introduction that you have called out the new Federal Communications Commission Chairman, Ajit Pai, particularly over a program called Lifeline. First, can you explain what that was about and your concerns about sort of the goals of this particular FCC chairman?
Well, we talked about the jobs of the future. One of the things that everyone knows is some of those jobs are in technology. So it would seem self-evident that we want to expand broadband access to communities that don't have them, and particularly low-income communities. The Lifeline program at the FCC does exactly that. And the first thing this new FCC chair did is to disqualify 9 companies from providing broadband in that Lifeline program and try to curtail that Lifeline program. In simple terms, what he was trying to do is make it harder for companies to provide subsidized access to the internet to the communities that need it most. And I couldn't think of something that is more wrong-headed in terms of bridging the digital divide or helping us give opportunity to people in this new technology economy.
So then under Pai, what do you think is the future of net neutrality, or the requirement that broadband providers treat all internet traffic the same?
Well, I'm very concerned because he has talked about getting rid of net neutrality. And here's why it matters. Here's why someone should care. Right now on the internet, we don't have special prices for people who are wealthy. It's not that you can go, if you're wealthy, and say, I want to have a special fast lane where my emails get priority in getting delivered, where my access to ESPN or CNN or Facebook is faster because I'm rich or because I'm a corporation. Because we believe the internet should be equally accessible to everyone, regardless of their income or their status. What Ajit Pai's vision is to really be able to auction off the internet to the highest bidder. And I couldn't think of anything that would be more distorting to the democratic process. And I hope that progressives will stand strongly and be vigilant in the fight to protect net neutrality.
Well, let's hear from Samir in Fremont. Hi, Samir.
Hi, good morning. First, I wanted to say you're doing a great job. My entire family voted for you, and we are very happy. So my question is regarding gerrymandering. Republicans have done a good job of gerrymandering the district and started winning elections. What is it that Democrats are going to do to fix the system?
Well, Samir, thank you. Thank you for your and your family's support. I believe the California Redistricting Commission is a great model for our state and the country. The California Redistricting Commission, which I supported, took redistricting out of the hands of politicians and put it in the hands of citizens so that politicians couldn't draw their own lines in running for a district that they hand-drew. We need that kind of reform across the country, and we need reform advocates to do this. There are independent commissions in other states, but I hope that we will eventually see national adoption of that.
Thanks, Samir. Another listener tweets, how concerned is Khanna about the nearly $20 trillion of national debt? Does he support the Export-Import Bank?
Well, everyone should be concerned, of course, about the national debt, but that is not, in my judgment right now, the main concern. First has to be economic growth for the middle class and the working class, and we have an aggregate demand problem. We don't have enough money in the pockets of working families or the middle class to be able to spend that funding, and that has to be our primary concern. On the national debt, one of the things that would make Social Security solvent and would go a long way to dealing with the debt is to get rid of the cap above $200,000, $250,000, and have people pay a Social Security tax. Another thing that would help close the debt is to tax companies on their overseas profits. Another thing that would help close the debt is to tax capital gains that's been held for 1 or 2 years at a higher rate. So there are a lot of – or final point on it is to get rid of the interest deduction that corporations have, that a lot of these private equity companies, they buy a company and then they sell it, and they get to deduct the interest on the loans they take to do that. So we have a lot of loopholes in the tax system that if we made it fairer would go a ways to dealing with the debt.
And let me thank the listener for that and try to go to Van in San Jose. Hi, Van.
Hello, Congressman. Thank you. Thank you, KQED, for this series. Actually, I'm represented by Representative Swalwell, and on account of this series, I found out I made an excellent choice when I voted for him. My question to you, Congressman, for the Democratic platform, what would you think of the theme progress or populism for the many, not just the privileged few? And I'll hang up.
Van, thanks.
That's great. That's a simpler way of saying what I've been trying to say all morning. So that's terrific. I like it. And Eric Swalwell has been doing great work, so I'm glad that you've been happy with him.
Well, Paul writes, if Ro Khanna agrees capitalism is rigged in favor of business, does he understand that a big part of that is that American workers have been displaced by foreign workers?
I think that's a part of it. I don't think that's the only thing. The larger issues have been around the rules of the economy that I think have helped shareholders, have helped the Wall Street executives and speculators at the expense of ordinary Americans and workers. Certainly, there has been abuse in the H-1B process, but the H-1B program is about 65,000 folks. So even where we need to reform the abuse, I don't think it's as simple as saying that just reforming that will solve the issue. There's some much more fundamental issues in the American economy that need to be dealt with.
With all the issues that are coming up, how would you, list your top three priorities?
One is figuring out how do we create the new jobs in my district and around the country, and particularly for folks who have been left behind. Two is how do we get the economy, the rules working for everyone and not just for the privileged few, and specifically on that, taking on high drug prices, taking on the distributional gains of the economy, not just going to shareholders but going to employees and workers.
Let's hear from Tom in Redwood City. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, my quick question is, we talk, and I've heard a lot about the middle and working class, but my concern is that there isn't going to be one, and especially on the peninsula anymore, with the cost of housing and people, sharing rooms and sharing houses. That's how people are affording to live in San Jose or Redwood City, and the peninsula is just becoming a land of Googleville and Appleville. It's not really a place where working class people can live anymore.
Well, I share your concern. I think we have to have housing for nurses and teachers and those who are doing elder care and those who are working in government. And I have always been a proponent of affordable housing near transit and making the investment in affordable housing so that we don't just have a community with all software engineers. It would be a boring community. I don't think software engineers would want that kind of a community. So we need to have a diverse community of people of all different professions and backgrounds, and affordable housing is a key to that.
Tom, thanks for making that point. Jenny asks, Ro Khanna mentioned our responsibility and effectiveness in making public opinion heard by politicians. However, many representatives are refusing to meet with constituents and phone lines are blocked or overloaded. What can citizens in this situation do to make their voices heard and to get to their representatives?
Well, Jenny, I appreciate it. I think that they ought to demand public meetings. I mean, I'm doing a town hall tonight. And we're expecting a ton of folks from our district. I believe members of Congress ought to do regular town halls. I try to respond to as many tweets and Facebook messages personally as possible. But if a member is not responding, certainly they can people can go visit their offices. They can go, if they're really adventurous, to D.C. and visit their offices. They can write to the media. You will be amazed at how much one citizen or two citizens who have an issue can have their voice matter in this country. I mean, people really care and listen and certainly listen to criticism.
Democratic National Committee elections are coming up. Congressman Khanna, who are you supporting?
I'm supporting Keith Ellison.
And why do you think he is where the party needs to go?
I think he has understanding of the grassroots and grassroots organizing. He understands where the energy of this party is, which is with the grassroots, not with the elites. He understands that we need fundamental reform of the party in California and in the national level. I'm supporting Kimberly Ellis for the role of California chair. We need new voices. We need people who are going to make this party more inclusive and have new people run for office.
Freshman Congressman of the South Bay, Ro Khanna, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. It's really been a pleasure.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton, and Jeremy Siegel. Our engineer is Howard Gelman today. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online help from Amanda Font. Our interns are Devin Holt and Stephanie Roberts. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And Holly Kernan is our executive producer. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.